because technology allows us to change the way we relate to ourselves, but also how we connect to others, and in general, how we engage with the wider world. And the fact that technology connects us, you know, is not rocket science, but it's still important to remember that, because sometimes we like to think about humans as being separate from nature, right? Isolated from the rest of the world around us, but we're not. So through technology, we can learn new ways as well to connect.
That was our guest, Greta Rossi. Greta heads up Recipes for Wellbeing, an organization that works for the fundamental evolution of the support for change makers around the world, and in particular to their digital well-being. In this episode, Greta's going to talk to us about how she perceives digital well-being, the future of the issue as well, of digital well-being, in an age of constant digital innovation, and also how you can start to think more seriously about your relationship to the digital world. But before we start with the episode, I want to welcome you to Digital Mindfulness. On this show, we bring together experts from around the world with a focus on delivering and creating time well spent digital experiences. Over the past 4 years, we've brought together global thought leaders to discuss the latest thinking on topics such as digital wellness, ethical computing, humane technology, digital detoxing, information overload, and much, much more. To find out more about us and to join our growing international community, go to digitalmindfulness.net, where you'll find some required listening podcasts to get you going, and also links to our upcoming international events. Okay, let's get on with the show. I hope you enjoy listening to Greta Rossi. Greta, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today, and I'm really looking forward to our discussion about digital well-being. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lawrence. I'm super excited to be here, and thank you again for the invitation.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm really curious to chat with you now.
You're very welcome. So, Greta, tell the audience, if you would, just a little bit about yourself. What Recipes for Wellbeing is exactly, and particularly how you came to it, because you've got a fascinating story.
Absolutely. So I'll try to share a little bit about my story in a way that though introduces the journey of Recipes for Wellbeing too, because as you can imagine, they're very interconnected. So I'm going to take you back to May 2015, when I was accepted to the Changemaker Exchange Summit in Istanbul. And this was a 5-day unconference for young social entrepreneurs from Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East. And this actually was the first time that I was, accepted onto something. I had been running my social enterprise, Akash Innovation, in London for 18 months. And until then, I had only received rejections from grant-giving bodies, fellowships. So as you can imagine, I was pretty excited to go to Turkey to spend a few days with fellow change makers to learn from them and to also share my own experience. And as it turns out, I wasn't the only one who had also experienced, you know, criticism and rejections and failure, who had felt isolated and alienated and emotionally overwhelmed, as well as physically exhausted. It was something that was pretty shared across the cohort, across the people who were there with me. And I remember that at one point, I proposed to run a very short mindfulness meditation session for those who just wanted to give it a go. And because I had found it very powerful for my own journey, so I wanted to share it with others. And what happens is that, to my surprise, everyone in the group joined for that brief session. I clearly wasn't prepared for everyone in the group to join, but it was great. And most importantly, it gave me a sense that maybe, just maybe, we needed more of this in the summit. So the following year, I reunited with a few other change makers and I met others. We had our own, alumni summit. And this was in Marrakesh in May 2016. And what happened is that I was invited as a half participant, half facilitator. And when I was wearing the facilitator hat, actually, I was testing for the first time officially within the community a few well-being activities. And these were very well received. And what we saw is that they lifted up the energy of the summit. So this was a very important insight, another one. But more importantly, that's where I met Alessia, and where I reunited with another fellow changemaker, Tarek. And both of them now, they're my co-founders at Recipes for Wellbeing. And curiously enough, Alessia, actually, who attended a different summit, She was part of a small group of change makers who received a very small collaboration grant to implement a two-day well-being retreat for them after the Marrakesh gathering, because they were also very tired and exhausted. So just wanted to, you know, take care of themselves for a little bit. And Tarek joined that retreat. And during those 2 days, they co-created an incredible retreat, you know, where they explored different well-being techniques, activities and tools. So we can say that those two experiences, me facilitating these well-being activities at the Changemaker Exchange Summit and Alessia hosting this first well-being retreat, they were the incipit of Recipes for Well-being, even before it was called Recipes for Well-being. But what was clear is that there was a need for that, so we decided to explore further. So what happened is that we met up in Paris. It was very hot. It was, I think it was the World Cup finals week. So it was really hot, very crowded. And we were a team of five back then. And we applied for a slightly bigger funding, which we got, to basically prove our concept and to test and pilot four well-being retreats. And so we were in Paris planning, you know, and as we were planning, we were eating a lot because we're all food lovers. So the name naturally came to mind, Recipes for Well-being. And the idea is that, you know, we feed our bodies with good food and we find inspirations from new recipes in cookbooks or when we go to a restaurant. So we wanted to create a concept for well-being that is accessible and nutritious. So in a nutshell, that's what Recipes for Well-being is about. We love food, but we also love food for our well-being. So what we really try to do here is to change the culture of change making to include a focus on holistic well-being so that anyone could actually contribute effectively to making a positive change in the world. And I realized that, you know, this could maybe sound a very dense sentence, so let me just break it down. By culture of change making, what we mean is that we see that many activists, social care workers, social entrepreneurs, and in general, we live in a society that is based on a paradigm of fear and scarcity. There's never enough time, there's never enough money, there's never enough people to get the job done, there's always more to do, there's more crises breaking out around the world. So we always are in constant fear and we have this sense of scarcity, never enough. So we want to change that. We really want to move from scarcity to abundance and to really appreciate the fullness and richness of life. So this is one important thing to mention that fits into this well-being definition. But also, for us, well-being is not just about going to a spa and taking an afternoon off. Of course, that's important. But we really see well-being as a catalyst for positive change in the world. Because when you, as a change maker, when you experience well-being for yourself, that's of course great, but also you're then empowered to then spread it to others, to spread it to your team, to your community, to your society. So you're actually changing the whole world by focusing on yourself. And this is very important, that by focusing on your own inner work, then the effectiveness of your outer work increases. And finally, I know this is a term that is overused, but what do we mean by holistic? It means that for us, well-being is more than a good state of health in the absence of problems because, you know, there's ups and downs in life. So we want to embrace the good and the bad, let's call it this way, and try to bring our minds, our bodies, our hearts, and our souls into alignment. So all of them work together to support each other. So we really see this well-being as we can call it as a state of flourishing, of thriving. You know, this is another term that people use to really embrace the fullness of life. And of course, as we are change makers, so then also contribute to making positive change in society.
I think that's a great story, Greta, because it just has relevance to absolutely everybody, because our well-being is not something I think that people, even if we're aware that we need to take care of our well-being, I don't think we know how to do it. So having these recipes, as you put it, these guidelines for taking care generally of our well-being as we go through day to day is really incredibly important.
Yes, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I look after my well-being, but I'm on holiday and I don't have any work and I'm sitting maybe on a beach with a really nice drink. You know, that's fairly easy. It's much harder to look after ourselves when we're stressed, when we're anxious, when we have deadlines. But this is when it's important. I always remember there was a beautiful quote from the Dalai Lama who said, you know, I meditate every day for half an hour, but it is on those days where I'm really, really stressed that I meditate for 1 hour. It's exactly when we think that we don't have the time, we don't have the energy, we don't have the resources, that's when we need well-being. So this is what we really want to try to do with our recipes, is to make it more accessible, make it so that it can be incorporated in your life rather than you need to take, you know, a week, a month off and go on a sabbatical. That's great, but not everyone can do that. So it's how do you really change and adapt so that you can still work, still do your things, you know, look after your family and whatnot, but also flourish and thrive.
So I really want to go back to something that you mentioned about the fact that you believe we're living in an era of heightened scarcity or feelings of scarcity and fear. And I wonder if you can just talk about why that is, particularly now.
I mean, I think we're seeing that the world is changing faster and faster, and technology is playing a role in this. And people are more aware of everything that's going on, right? Before, back in the day, you know, before you actually got to know about what was happening all the other side of the world, it would take, maybe you would never even know about it. Now it's really easy to get access to information, and it's very fast, and the society is changing very fast, and we are not adapting fast enough. I'm talking from the consciousness level, from a moral level. And so it feels that we're technology and society is always a bit, it's outpacing us, right? And so there is this sense of, you know, I need to do more, you know, where when we think about our children and we tell them, you know, actually your job, the job that you will do, it hasn't been created yet, which is great from that creative potential, but also puts out of stress and anxiety because we don't know what the future holds for us. We don't even know what the present holds for us anymore. So this creates a lot of anxiety and pressure for people. I think this is being from my personal experience working with change makers. And of course, there is the whole other lot of the global crisis, right? Become more aware of climate change and other natural disasters that are happening around the world, war and conflict, still many problems around women's issues, gender equality, all of that. So we're becoming more and more aware of these problems, and we're just overwhelmed, which is, it's normal. It's a lot to take in.
So Grace, I'm really interested to know how you personally would define well-being in a digital age.
That's a very good question. I'm going to go back to the food metaphor because we're food lovers. Digital well-being for us, it's about crafting and consuming a balanced and varied diet, where digital technologies are actually feeding our minds, our bodies, hearts, and our souls with all the nutrients they need. So the idea is that digital well-being starts with yourself, right? But it doesn't stop there. It is also concerned to how you share a meal with your family, with your colleagues. So you can really appreciate the richness of all life around us. And the food metaphor really works for me because if we really want to have a balanced diet, we need fruits, we need veggies, we need cereal, we need carbs, we need a bit of everything. But it has to be balanced, it has to be varied, and it has to be built on our own body, on what we need. So this is one important thing, that digital well-being, this digital diet, is personal to each of us. But what I would like to stress out about digital well-being is the fact that it's relational, because technology allows us to change the way we relate to ourselves, but also how we connect to others, and in general, how we engage with the wider world. And the fact that technology connects us, you know, is not rocket science, but it's still important to remember that, because sometimes we like to think about humans as being separate from nature, right? Isolated from the rest of the world around us, but we're not. So through technology, we can learn new ways as well to connect to other people, to ourselves, and to the rest of life. And I think these new technologies especially are accelerating and expanding this connection element. But sometimes they're not enabling a healthier connection, but they're maybe inhibiting this healthier connection. So for us, when we talk about crafting a balanced digital diet, is so that you can boost your well-being as an individual, but also as a collective. So that, again, you can find, you know, what you need to flourish. And as we explored earlier, already I said, you know, when you are thriving, then you're more likely and better equipped to help others to thrive. So I really see as technology having a big equation in the whole, in the bigger field of well-being.
I think it's really easy to find these days stories in the mainstream media about the different ways that technology contributes to decreasing our health or contributing to anxiety, etc. But can you just talk about what it would feel like or what it actually is to thrive with technology or to get digital well-being?
Sure. I mean, again, I'll speak from experience because I think this is the most important in terms of the most direct body of knowledge I have access to. And, you know, if I think about recipes for well-being, it's we're three at the moment. So it's a really tiny team. I'm based in Italy. My co-founder, Alessia, she's based in Switzerland, and Tarek is based in Bahrain. Now, this means that we meet physically, if we're lucky, once a year, which is, of course, great. And I would never replace physical meetings, right, and physical meetups and the importance as well of this physical proximity. However, if it wasn't for technology, I'm afraid that recipes for well-being wouldn't be where it is nowadays. And so we use different online platforms to facilitate our work, from, you know, project management platforms like Trello and communication platforms like Trello. We use Zoom or Skype, so you know the name. So this obviously makes our work a lot easier from where we are, because imagine if every time we had to travel to see each other. This also enables us to make connection, you know, to incredible people like yourself. So this has made a lot of things possible, and also to the flexibility, right? Because I'm sitting in my living room, right? And I can do this rather than having to go to an office to meet you. So I think this has been one of the most important things. As well, though, it has to be balanced well, because all of a sudden we could end up having meetings very early in the morning, very late, over the weekends, and therefore the technology is not enabling us to have that freedom, that flexibility, that control, but actually becoming slave of these technologies where they're actually not nurturing our well-being. So like anything, it's about crafting that balance and really knowing what works for you and where to put the boundary in and really set the limit and try to respect that.
Thanks for that definition. And I think it's really helpful because a lot of times when we do talk about well-being in the digital sphere, it's really easy to lean towards, say, looking at more vulnerable communities in our society. So, for example, we talk a lot about well-being for children, but I think with these recipes for well-being that you've just described, these again can be applied to everyone and can help everybody to think more expansively about their digital well-being.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea of a well-being recipe, I mean, what is it? Let's explain it so that our listeners can get a better sense of what we're talking about. If I tell you to take a cookbook, you open it, and what do you find in it? You have information about its recipes, and each recipe will tell you, okay, for this particular dish, you need certain ingredients, you need maybe a certain kind of preparation is required, you need specific tools, and maybe it tells you how long to cook it for and what temperature. So it gives you all the information. This is exactly what we want to do with well-being. So in the same way that a recipe in a cookbook takes you through the steps to prepare a particular dish, our well-being recipes guide you through specific processes to cultivate well-being in your everyday work and life. So they can really be easy as following step 1, 2, and 3, and you can adapt it. So there is a variety of recipes on our website, and these are all freely accessible. And I think I really want to mention this because we really want to make this knowledge accessible to everyone. We don't own it. You know, it comes from different bodies of research. It comes from me reading many books on various topics, including neuroscience, neuropsychology. And this is important as well, that some of these recipes are embedded and they're backed by scientific research. And so they're recipes to cultivate your mental well-being, but also your physical well-being, emotional and spiritual. So we try to look at all four of them. And like anything, you know, when you go to a restaurant, you can begin with a starter, then move on to the main, and then go to dessert. So that's what we do with our recipes. So you can choose, okay, do you want maybe just a very quick activity you dip into a starter, or you're looking for a more full-bodied experience and move on to a main course, or you want something nice to conclude on your team meeting on a well-being note, and then you move on to dessert. So we really also play around with the food language to make it easy for people to actually engage with the recipes. You know, there's from very easy to really spicy recipes that maybe require more extended knowledge of well-being. And the idea is that these can work for anyone, you know. They work, of course, for change makers, but anyone, because very often what they do is that they help us to feel more appreciated, more valued. They boost our immune system. They improve the way we relate to our colleagues and coworkers. They change maybe the dynamics in a team, you know, creating a culture of openness. So they can really work across cultures, across contexts, and definitely we want to expand and tailoring some of these activities more for digital well-being and, of course, for young people, children and teens.
I really like this idea of digital well-being. So I think it would be great if you could share with the audience an example of one of these recipes and also just the effect that it's had on some of the people that you've worked with.
Yes. So regarding digital well-being, let's see, one activity that is really simple and I think it taps into everyone's life is emailing, right? We are bombarded by an amount of emails and overwhelmed. And I'm getting to the point where I'm literally starting to hate emails. But of course, there is a way to change my relationship to emails. And this is by engaging in what we call mindful emailing. And this is a really quick and simple practice, but it's so powerful. So let me guide you through it because it's very simple. So maybe what you want to do is think back of an email that you sent, you know, in the past few days where you maybe were upset with someone, you responded angrily in a reactive mode, right? You didn't have time. That email arrived, someone didn't understand what you said before, and then you just responded and blurted your response like really reactively. Take back that email and try to write again what would be an answer from a more mindful place. So what you can do is to stop. You write a sentence, you stop for a moment, you look back, try to read, and really try to think about what is the intention here. You know, what do I want? What is the message I want to come across? And most important, how will it add value to the other person? And this is very important because actually what you realize is that you could think like, oh, this is, you know, I'm becoming slower because this takes more time. Actually, you're becoming much more effective because A, you stop replying to certain emails that don't need a response. B, you actually write something that adds value to the other person. Sometimes just writing and responding reactively does not help our communication, does not help the relationship to get to a better place, does not help our collaboration. So really think about the bigger picture and what is your intention and then put into words. So on our website, we actually have the more precise guidelines on how you can do practices mindful emailing. And we've actually tested this in our workshop and that helps. But also another thing that is important, I think, around digital well-being is learning sometimes how to disconnect. So when we host workshops or even our immersive retreats, what we do is that we encourage people to not use their phones for a little bit and see what happens. And sometimes, especially with young people or younger generations, what we see is that they look at us and they're scared. They're like, what? You're asking me not to use my phone for, let's say, half a day? And this is because, and sometimes they don't realize, they're addicted. Right, we all are nowadays, and so until sometimes you remove in small bites, right? Because if it is an addiction, you can't go. You know, you have to be careful about removing this addiction. When you create this experience, which can be short, of removing the phone away and allowing them to disconnect, to then reconnect in a different way, you raise their self-awareness of their digital usage, and they're like, "Oh wow, I didn't realize this," or
they didn't realize that it would create certain physical symptoms and reactions in them. So it's important as well to create these moments of disconnection so that the following time when we reconnect, we do so in a more mindful and meaningful way.
Everything that you've just been speaking about, Greta, really relates to enhancing people's awareness of how they use email, how, like, their emotional state when they're responding to different people or when they're composing different emails. But what's your opinion of the different digital wellness or well-being tools that, for example, allow us to see our screen time, how much time we're spending with our devices, and the other plethora of digital well-being tools? What's your opinion of combining that greater awareness with the other digital tools that we have available to us?
I think so. I think it can help for many people. I think what is important, again, we need to find the trigger, which is different for everyone, right? Because sometimes, think about climate change. We know the statistics. We have the data. And yet, it's still difficult to change our behavior. And so, you know, we can get information about screen time, about, you know, what, which applications we use, and realize, oh, wow, I didn't realize I spent X amount of hours, you know, scrolling down a particular social networking site. So that, of course, can work for some people, but it doesn't work for everyone. And so that's why sometimes it's important to create these experiences of allowing people to do something different so they can reflect back. But I would say, and the invitation comes again from personal experience, is that whatever your engagement with digital technologies and whatever your journey and whatever changes you want to make, is that what is important to do is to cultivate compassion. Compassion towards ourselves. Because imagine that, you know, my phone tells me, okay, you spent 16 hours on your phone today. And that can be like, I can feel pretty shitty about myself and be like, how is this possible? You know, and feel and, you know, pull myself down. And so when I cultivate self-compassion, I also create that space to really care for myself, because just putting myself down doesn't help me to nurture my well-being. So the invitation is, if you're new to this concept of digital well-being and once you start digging deeper into you, you realize that there is, wow, a lot to be done, a lot to be changed, please, please, please really be compassionate towards yourself and towards others, because everyone has their own journey. So it's easy to judge someone based on, you know, when we see even people on their phones, you know, on the tube or in the buses talking loudly, you know, it's easy to assume and be like, oh, look at them. But we don't know their story. We don't know what led them to where they are. So let's cut them some slack.
I think this topic of digital wellness is just so important for everyone, particularly as the world becomes increasingly digitized, and it's something that people are going to be just aware of. They're going to be aware of their state, of how they feel, and the kind of impact that using these digital tools has on not only themselves, but their surroundings. But I guess the real question I want to ask you, Greta, is your opinion on the future of digital well-being, particularly as our technology landscape becomes more cluttered with things like virtual reality, AR, AI, you know, all of these new technologies that are going to become increasingly used by consumers. What then is the future for digital well-being?
Wow, that is a good question. And I wish I had the answer to that. I probably would be somewhere else if I knew it. To be honest with you, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not sure I can give a full answer. I can do justice to this question, because technologies, these digital technologies are evolving very fast, and sometimes too fast for human consciousness to follow. So it's even hard to imagine, you know, what could be in 5 years, really, you know. So I don't know. But what seems reasonable for me to say is that I think that technology will become more and more present. So if anything, the topic of digital well-being will become ever more important. This means, though, that the conversation is not static. The definition of digital well-being will continue to change. Our approach to it will need to change. The tools and resource techniques will need to adapt. Because a few years ago, if we think about children, young people, their I guess the main technology would be TV. And so we started hearing, you know, and about the impact of spending too many hours in front of TV. And then we started to get MP3 players and then iPods, and then the iPhone came in and then they, and all of that. So it's important that we see digital well-being not as an end, but as an ongoing process. And so even when we try to achieve this digital well-being, we must remember that it's not something we can achieve and be like, okay, now I am well, you know, done. No, it's an ongoing process of regrounding, rebalancing, and exploring and testing. So I would say that the future holds a lot of exploration, a lot of exciting changes. And like any time, technology is not neutral, right? So I would say we should also question the intention of the people developing these technologies, because technology itself is not neutral because there are people behind it. And not just people, I think, especially moving into the future.
So essentially, Greta, we're talking about having greater awareness, or I guess being much more intentional about the technology that we do use. But again, as our technology becomes increasingly screen free, do you think that this same, you know, if we apply this same level of awareness, even though technology becomes much more ambient in our lives, do you think that's still going to apply?
Yeah, I think I would agree. And in general, it expands beyond, you know, the digital world, right? So is how do we have nurturing and supportive relationships in our lives? How do we do enough physical activity? And how do we work and find meaning in our work, but also have, you know, hobbies and take time for other recreational activities? So I would say, like, you know, for digital well-being as well-being in general, it's about this constant grounding and rebalancing and getting to know ourselves better, because our needs are changing as we grow older, as we meet new people, as we maybe set up a family or move to another country or change jobs. So the needs are always changing for our well-being. And so the tools and resources and techniques need to also change, whether it is through technology or through other people and other sorts of activities.
So Greta, you've really been doing a lot of work with other companies on your approach to digital well-being. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. Actually, this has been a really new, exciting adventure for us. Back in June, we were invited to contribute to a new set of educational videos on Google Digital Workshop on the topic of digital well-being. So how do we empower people to achieve a healthy relationship with technology? And these videos are released. Well, I mean, I will release soon, or probably as people listen to us, have just been released. And so I definitely invite you to check them out. And I think what we shared was a little bit of what we shared here as well. So the broader definition of well-being, why it is important for people to think about it, you know, what does the research say in terms of how does technology enable well-being, but also how does technology sometimes prevent well-being, and what are some of the practices and tips that people can try out to cultivate well-being. After that, we were invited to give a workshop actually on well-being and digital well-being during the Web Summit in Lisbon, which is the world's largest tech event. It just happened this November, so about a month ago. And now we hope to continue our exploration with Google over the coming years, because this is a new emerging topic for them, and it is for us. And it's something that we see more and more of a need for, especially also in our well-being retreats. So these are physical well-being retreats, but the digital conversation is becoming more and more important as well.
Fabulous. So where can people find out more about you and your work and connect with you?
Sure. Well, I mean, oddly enough, or maybe not, the best place to find out more about our work is online. So I invite everyone to check out our website. It's recipesforwellbeing.org. As I mentioned earlier in our conversation, our website already has loads of different recipes for well-being. There is about 80 plus. And these are, again, activities to cultivate and boost your well-being, both at work and in life. If you're interested, though, in knowing a little bit more about some of the concepts we work with, I also write a blog post for the Shift Media Channel, which is part of the Wellbeing Project. So again, if you like reading and want to get a bit more food for thought, you can check out. And the link is wellbeing.com www.dash-project.org/shift. And finally, I think this is the one that I share, I'm really excited about, is that you can join one of welding retreats if you want to really get your hands dirty, so to say, and explore this topic of well-being. Currently, we have places available for our next retreat, which will happen in spring, in May, in Italy, in beautiful countryside with delicious food. So all information is on our website and, of course, all the main social media channels. And, of course, any questions, you know, contact us. We're really approachable people, so we're always happy to chat with you and collaborate if there is any opportunity.
Well, Greta, look, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insights about digital well-being and everything that you're doing. I really wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you so much. It was my absolute pleasure. And really, again, thank you for inviting me. And I really look forward to learning more together about this exciting topic of digital well-being.